I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE in the heart of the Middle East. It's just over a week before US voters decide which direction the world will take. Will it be war or peace? Today in 1962, the Earth narrowly missed being destroyed when Russian communist leader Nikita Khrushchev withdrew missiles from Cuba in return for JFK's removal of missiles from Turkey. Today, though, there's no sign of a mentally ill US president following JFK's lead. Hated NATO leaders and their G7 puppets seem intent on provoking nuclear conflict via arming of pariah failed formations, Israel, Ukraine and Taiwan. For the elites of NATO countries to achieve their aims, they need full-spectrum dominance of their peoples, from the USA to their vassal states in Western Europe and Southeast Asia. It might be social media, TV news, it might be art, it might be philosophy. All must be geared to prevent peoples in NATO countries from understanding their mental and economic imprisonment. And someone who was an early pioneer of explaining the subservient-to-power fake philosophies conjoined with neoliberalism to replace a dominant Marxism was quantum physicist Professor Jean Brickmore. He joins me again from Paris in France, as well as his seminal humanitarian imperialism, using human rights to sell war. He has written Fashionable Nonsense, Postmodern Intellectuals' Abuse of Science, and with Noam Chomsky, Reason versus Power, Pascal's Wager. Professor Brickmore, thank you so much for coming back on. A long time since you've been on Going Underground, a long time since I asked for autographs for your co-written book about the emptiness of post-structuralist philosophy. Did you ever think, though, that your seminal book attacking humanitarian imperialism would descend into mass UK-US-EU armed genocide on the scale we are seeing on social media in the Middle East and West Asia, let alone attempts, it seems now, at nuclear Armageddon and brinkmanship?
No, I certainly did not expect that. And I must say that, when I wrote Humanitarian Imperialism, I was critical of the part of the left, a very substantial part of the Western left, who is always denouncing human rights violation and lack of democracy in countries which are opposed to the United States and Israel. But then I always say, well, if you do that against countries that are supported by the United States, it's not going to have any efficiency. Of course, they say, well, it's efficient because then the U.S. wages war, put sanctions, so on and so forth, but on those countries. But when it comes to Israel, nothing is done. Although the same people, at least those who are honest, they are not all honest, but some are honest, those are honest, denounce and they protest and they do that and that, zero effect. I'm astonished by the lack of effect. And in fact, I was very surprised because something happened in France fairly recently. Macron, first of all, he said we shouldn't sell arms to Israel anymore. Big deal.
They're still sending.
And then he said Netanyahu should remember that his country was founded by a UN resolution. That's the famous or infamous Resolution 181, what set up the partition plan. And I always thought that that was the one resolution that Israel could use and their supporters could use to justify legally the state of Israel. And all hell broke loose. Everybody was against him. He doesn't know history. He doesn't know anything. And Netanyahu said, no, our state was founded by the liberation struggle, their so-called liberation war. Okay, so everything is based on violence because usually we say 67 is a conquest due to war. That's illegitimate. Now he's saying that everything in Israel is illegitimate because he doesn't care about the one UN resolution, which is a General Assembly resolution, not the Security Council, by the way, but anyway. And everybody, and then other people say, he doesn't know the Bible. So, so we have two justifications for Israel now, naked violence and something which I should say, a book of legend, the Bible. Because I don't think there is any evidence for their kingdoms. And of course, there is no evidence for the genetic link between the present Jews and
Judea and Samaria and all of that. But actually, come to think of it, Macron, who, last I looked, is still your president, despite the legislative elections, which showed where the people's votes have been going. What gives him the right to talk about Lebanon particularly and not Gaza because he was once the colonial power? Does he not see how imperialist and absurd it looks like that he cares about Lebanon in some way, not that he seems to have done anything? There are no French troops on the ground defending the Lebanese people, some might say thankfully.
Yeah, but you see, whether one likes it or not, or whether one consider it imperialist or not, the fact is that France has always self-styled itself as the protector of Christians in the Near East, okay? So Lebanon is a country which is partly Christian. Of course, there are Christian Syria and so on. They have done nothing. And of course, there are Christian Palestinians. They do nothing. And in fact, you can see videos where you see Jews in Israel spitting in front of Christian churches. They have destroyed Christian villages in the south of Lebanon, and they have attacked churches and cemeteries and so on. Nothing. Of course, I don't think they should defend Christians particularly, but they said they were going to do that in the past, and now, of course, they're entirely... I mean, the degree of... I'm sorry to use this expression, but the degree of Zionization of the West is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Countries like France, they keep on speaking of secularism, they attack the Muslim for lack of secularism, blah, blah, blah. But what is this business about the kingdom of David and Solomon? Why is that secular? I mean, it's just unbelievable. And then their philosophers, supposedly secular philosophers, go on TV and they say, if you wear a kefir, that's like a Nazi uniform. Michel Onfray said that. I mean, they say the most outrageous things. And it's just unbelievable. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I've written things about the Zionization of the mentality, but I couldn't believe it would be so far, go so far. And, you know, Macron, of course, is in a difficult situation because he's attacked and he's not defended. Of course, the left is never going to defend him because they hate him. I think that's not clever. I think they should defend him on that particular issue because there is actually a position which is close to the Gaulle's position, which is France having an independent role. I mean, it's not that the French are going to go to war with Israel about, you know...
Well, no, they're sending 30 million euro of weapons. These are Rafale... These are Rafale jets killing the children in Gaza, some of them. These are French components being used. I want to go back to the Holocaust, but it was this day in 1962 that Russian leader Khrushchev removed the missiles from Cuba in return for the United States removing theirs from Turkey. Any possibility that Britain and the United States and France will remove their long-range weaponry from Ukraine? Any possibility that negotiations are on the table, that they could somehow avoid the retaliatory Russian strike that has been threatened by Putin if Britain and presumably France gets its way and allows...
They keep on saying that Putin is isolated, that Russia is weak. So the first thing they did is take all these sanctions when the special military operation started in 2022, and they were going to crush Russia. They said that the French Minister of Economy said they're going to crush Russia economy, etc. Okay, good. What happened? Well, the Russian economy is doing well. The European economies are doing very badly. Even Germany, which used to be the powerhouse of European economy. And then they have used one Wunderwaffen after another. They have had the F-16. Now they say the F-16 are not useful. They have the long-range missiles. Long-range missiles are not useful, etc. And now, of course, they get more and more crazy. Some people say there's a former French prime minister who says we should send French troops in Ukraine, French troops in Ukraine to fight directly against Russia, so get directly in war with Russia. I mean, this is insane beyond belief, but the West is, you know, the West has created two monsters. One is, of course, Zelensky, who is completely crazy and out of reach, out of touch with reality. And the other is Netanyahu and the whole Zionist project. And he's being eaten from inside by these two monsters that are actually working objectively, as a Marxist would say, against the interest of the West and against all interests of the West, capitalists, workers, whatever. I mean, these guys don't help us at all because, they pushed. You see, the Americans have taken all these sanctions against Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, etc., Iran, everybody, okay? So they are very happy with that. What happened? Well, all those countries get together and now they are meeting in Kazan. And they are making the BRICS, and the BRICS is, of course, going to be much stronger than the G7 and the so-called West, which is really the United States and his puppet. You see, this is what happens. For example, you probably know Professor Mohandi from Tehran University, and he explained that Iran started to develop his long-range missile after the invasion of Iraq, because they said, okay, if they invade Iraq, maybe we'll be next. So we have to protect ourselves against Israel. and the United States. And then they develop all these missiles. Now they have these stockpiles of missiles. I don't know how many there are, how efficient they are, I don't know. But certainly the Israelis have been reluctant or hesitant to strike Iran so far. Maybe tonight it will change, we don't know, but so far. And that's because they're afraid of retaliation from these missiles. I mean, it's a completely absurd logic. They invaded Lebanon in 82, great victory. They were in Beirut, there was the massacre in Sabra and Shatila. Oh, beautiful, okay? Then they occupied the South Lebanon, and what is created? Hezbollah. And now they say they're great, but at that time they said, oh, we defeated the PLO, okay, fine. But now they have Hezbollah. Hamas is the same thing. It's the result of this escalation. Maybe if they defeat Hamas and Hezbollah, which is not done yet, to say the least, there'll be a more radical organization after that. I mean, it's just completely insane. And the way they have treated Russia and the way they have treated China, and we take sanctions, we do this, we do that, it only creates a counter-reaction. You can only, you have really to crush your adversary. They always have this fantasy of Germany in 1945, but not every conflict is like Germany in 1945. Vietnam was not like that. Algeria was not like that. And of course, our friends, the Taliban, were not crushed, to say the least, even though they were, I'm ironical when I say our friends, but they survived for 20 years and eventually they won. So what do the Americans expect? The only way to do is to make peace with the rest of the world and accept that there has to be a multipolar world. And in that multipolar world, the Zionist project has no place, the way it is set up, which is a hegemonic, racist, that just doesn't fit there.
Yeah, I mean, the Taliban's slightly different. They were helped by the CIA, hosted in Texas. You mentioned BRICS. You know, I'm speaking to you from the UAE. Here's a picture of the UAE president with Putin. What happens to all these countries that you mention that show and prove that Russia is not isolated after the 20,000 sanctions and the fact that it has a higher GDP growth, according to the IMF, than any G7, Genocide 7 country?
Yes, I mean, just the success. I mean, now they've been saying, Putin is isolated. And he's whether one likes him or not, that's a separate question. I'm not saying a judgment, but as a fact, he's a political genius. Because obviously he was prepared from between 2014, when there was the so-called annexation or retrieval of Crimea. Then they prepared for the sanction in 2022. And when the sanction came, they were prepared. They knew how to react. And then, of course, their diplomacy and particular Lavrov and so went all over the place. And many countries, for example, in Africa, but also India and so on, remember, and of course China, remember the support that was given by Russia, back then named the Soviet Union, to their liberation struggle. And they are thankful to Russia to some extent. You see that in the part of French Africa. I mean, they don't like us. Why would they like us? We have treated them badly. We have been contemptuous to them. We have despised them. We have exploited them and so on. Why on earth would they like us? And of course, now we are all against Russia. Russia are the bad guys. Then they say, well, wait a second. Russia helped us in many ways in the past, and we are not going to apply your sanction, because of course these sanctions are also against us. And now they are taking the interest on the money that the Russians deposited in European bank. Who is going to put money in a European bank from now on? Because how can you be sure that they won't be sanctioned against you in a month or in a year? You don't know, because this is arbitrary.
They haven't thought that out. They haven't thought that out, perhaps. Professor Jean-Marc Moore, I'll stop you there. More from the Professor of Theoretical Physics at the Catholic University of Louvain after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Professor of Theoretical Physics at the Catholic University of Louvain and author of Humanitarian Imperialism, Using Human Rights to Sell War, Professor Jean-Marc Moore. Professor Brickmore, you were talking in part one about the failure to isolate Vladimir Putin. I will return to the genocide in this region and the threats of nuclear war. But since you have talked in the past about NGOs and the use of NGOs by US hegemonic power, do you think at least the current terrible times the world faces mean at least the beginning of the end of these NGOs that have been used by Washington, often with USAID money and CIA-backed money, to try and further Washington foreign policy? No one even listens to them now, as it were. I mean, people. I'll get on to the ICC in a second, but no one listens to the NGOs that have been used. I mean, Amnesty International famously used, even though they do some good work, they were used for the Gulf War I and so on.
Yeah, that's true. And in 2008, I can send you the picture, there was a meeting of NATO in Chicago, and Amnesty put posters in the city asking NATO to continue the good work in favor of Afghan women and girls, because they continued, but he didn't do any good, which I regret, of course, but to the Afghan girls. I mean, the human rights movement, I think it started, maybe people like the beginning of the human rights movement was, I think, a relatively good idea, because there were states that were pretty repressive, and I think they were taking, political or prisoner from the West, one from the East, and one from the rest of the world. But increasingly, it has become what I call humanitarian imperialism, namely an ideology of justifying whatever the US is doing. But that's collapsing, of course, whether the NGO will do well or not. I know. To me, the NGOs play the role of the missionaries during the colonial period. That's basically what it is. I'm not saying all the missionaries have bad intention, or even NGOs have bad intention. But then they are very naive about the real relationship of strength in the world. That's what I was saying. I mean, you can protest human rights violation in Cuba and so on. Everybody will take more sanctions and so on and so forth. But if you protest genocide in Gaza, or even if you use the word, it's dangerous in my where I am to even use the word. But it's true. It's true. It's unbelievable. I mean, you are in the free part of the world, you might say, but if you are in England, I mean, you can be arrested when you go out of the plane because you have been too much advocating for Palestine. That happened to a British journalist recently. And in France, Belgium is a little better.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's recognized as no freedom of press in Western Europe. You don't have Rumble, the video platform, to play videos. It's banned by the French government. And
yes, that's true.
You can't watch this show on Rumble platform in France. It's the only country,
unless, I think, in the world that does that. Unless you have a VPN, you can still use a VPN. But
I mean, it is spectacular. I mean, in fairness, some of these NGOs that have done so much to damage the lives of, or attempts to damage people in Venezuela, in Cuba, as you mentioned, African governments, at least they have been quite good on Gaza. And do you think that there's been a certain heroism of Jewish Americans in the United States. We've seen mass protests and mass clampdowns on the Jewish diaspora and descendants, I suppose, of European Jews who've left, and their bravery facing off US security forces. Do you think that's had an influence for the first time? Because we've seen, despite what we're seeing in Western Europe, amazing courage from the Jews of America opposing U.S. Zionists like Blinken and Genocide Joe.
Yeah, but what I certainly admire them, but I'm afraid that what matters in this world is money more than courage. And it's the money that buys the Congress. Everybody sees that. Trump receives $100 million from the wife Adelson, the widow of Adelson, who inherited from her husband something like $26 billion. So $100 million is, pocket change. And
you really think it's that simple? You really think it's that simple? These are just corrupt gangsters in Congress and they're just bought off.
No, it must be more complicated than that.
It is Trump and Harris.
No, but it's always like that. You have an ideology that justifies what you do, and then it makes you feel good. Christianity was like that during the colonial period. But then on the other hand, you actually put forward your own personal interest, which is to be reelected, and for that you need the money from the lobby, and they all get money from the lobby, or they spontaneously follow the lobby, and you can just see that they have decided to spend, I forget how much money AIPAC has decided to spend in order to destroy the few people of Congress who are not totally following the line of the Israel. So That's why I think the carrot. No, I completely agree with the carrot. But I also I should also say that if I was Jewish, I'm not, but if I was Jewish and if I was really thinking of my self-interest, okay, then I would violently oppose Israel. Because unfortunately, I don't think it's legitimate or it's logical, but human psychology is not logical. What Israel does increase anti-Semitism all over the world. Because it claimed to be the Jewish state. It has Jewish symbols on its tanks, on its planes. All the mainstream Jewish organization, and in France, for example, the mainstream, the Jewish intellectuals you see on TV, I know Jews are not like that, but you know, those you see, but they don't go on TV, and Chomsky wouldn't go on TV. He's a bit old, but before he wasn't going on TV, Finkelstein won't go on TV. And these people, of course, the only ones you see on TV are all these fanatical people who will defend Israel no matter what. I'm always surprised. I thought that when Sharon was there or Shamir was there, the Jewish communities would distance themselves from Israel, but they didn't. With Netanyahu, they don't. With Gaza, they don't. With Lebanon, they don't. Tomorrow they can invade Saudi Arabia and they'll find the justification. Just
well, then, Smotrich.
I don't think it's good for them.
Smotrich, the government minister in Netanyahu's cabinet, has said Saudi Arabia indeed is a target. You know, the UN General Assembly investigates the ICC today at the United Nations. Karim Khan, the ICC chief prosecutor, has been on this show. Curious character. They banned Google-owned YouTube, banned our interview with him. And now there's some sort of sexual harassment suit against him that he denies. And everyone was surprised why he didn't issue the arrest warrant of Netanyahu. Something similar there to the forces at play that you've written about as regards humanitarian imperialism, the ICC, a famously international Caucasian court for African that Washington was not happy with. ICC, a bit like Amnesty, Human Rights Watch. They're all part of this mélange of Cold War stuff.
I don't want to go into many details. Of course, you can say that at least Putin is not black, but they're indicting, they're suing Putin also. But of course, they it's always against enemies of the United States and mostly of Israel, I must say. But it's really unbelievable. But then, of course, this thing about sexual harassment, it's very unfortunate. I hope nobody is going to accuse me. I don't think I can be accused of sexual harassment. But of course,
I smiled, but actually, it is very serious. I mean, there are forces of hegemonic power that deliberately weaponize sexual harassment to attack people who aren't.
Of course, of course. And then I always say that you have at least, I mean, the feminists, then they say you have to trust the women. Well, wait a second. I mean, what about the right of defense? I mean, There has to be a right to defense. And I completely agree. They will, of course, find a tax problem or sexual harassment or something like that. And then they will get rid of the people they don't like. It's really, it is really a problem. And there's been,
But you think that's why Karim Khan hasn't issued the arrest warrant? They have something on him? Basically, I mean, everyone's wondering why he hasn't issued the arrest warrant for Netanyahu. It's presumably that kind of thing, or maybe they're not connected. We don't know. We'll not know until the memoirs are written, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't like to speculate too much, but of course, these kind of tricks are used all the time, and they were used, for example, I mean, there is a very good book which I recommend to all your listeners by Alison Weir called Against Our Better Judgment about how the support for Israel was created in the United States. And many diplomats and statespeople, et cetera, in the United States were not anti-Zionist, anti-Semite, and so on, but realized that support for Israel was not, creation of Israel, was not in the best interest of the United States. And those people were harassed, pushed aside, et cetera, by all kinds of means that can't be described as honest. And that's how they established their power. I mean, I'm talking about the 20s, 30s, 40s, et cetera. I mean, now the power is enormous. And I don't know how we can get rid of it.
Just finally, I mean, obviously the fake news organizations are there, as well as this cramping down on freedom of speech in NATO countries. I mean, you're in Paris. Do you think most people still believe Syria used chemical weapons, that somehow ISIS wasn't connected with the NATO security force? Have all the myths basically worked in Western Europe? I mean, most people would say in the elites' formations that, Syria used chemical weapons. That's why it was needed to happen, the bombing of Syria by France.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now there's been a documentary now showing that for 40 years in French TV, which I didn't look at, but is too irritating. But for 40 years, Trump has been a puppet of the Kremlin. A puppet of the Kremlin, that's it. And they say it's well documented. So, and that's Russiagate all over again. And of course, Russiagate, we know, was fake. But in France, they're still selling that. But you see, the problem is that most people, of course, it's always the same problem. Foreign policy is extremely important. That's what decides war and peace. And of course, it has an enormous impact on the economy, as we see with the sanction against Russia. And of course, World War II or World War I had quite a bit of an impact. But people don't care about that. All an elite matter. And that's the problem. So there is no mass mobilization or anything, really. I mean, there are some small demonstrations about Palestine, but there is very little consciousness about the self-interest, the self-preservation of the Western countries towards a totally different direction. And in the elite circle, there is no real discussion. There are a few people like De Villepin, or Emmanuel Todd, who is taking a dissident position, but then they are eliminated, anti-Semite, for De Villepin at least, anti-Semite, etc. And so there is no real honest discussion, even among the elite. And then for the masses of the population, there are so much problems which are bread and butter ones that they can't get really involved in foreign policy. And that's how the democracy doesn't work, as advertised, to say the least, putting aside all the problem that the European Union is not democratic, that the election in the US is not democratic because it's all a matter of money. But even so, I mean, there could be more discussion even among the elite of the real interest, of their real interest in waging all these conflicts and all these wars, which is not the case in my view, but very few people can say that. And of course, it's not at all in the interest of the general population, but the general population is kept in the dark, or it's fed some propaganda, and in any case, they don't think it concerns them, because it concerns them in the long run and not in the short run.
Professor Jean Brigmont, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US-EU armed genocide. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.